We've produced a new CD of two sermons preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin, one for Lent and one for Easter. And we'll send you this new CD for any size donation during the season of Lent. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check, Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. And for any size gift between now and April 12th, we'll send you a CD of one of Todd's Lent and Easter sermons.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Alvin Schmidt joins us. We got a lot to cover here, starting with a big subject when it comes to the impact of Christianity on civilization. A simple question. Would education in general look anything like it does today apart from the impact of Christianity on civilization? We'll answer that question, especially with regard to higher education that we consider now vital to a well-rounded life and career. Would it exist as it does today? Dr. Alvin Schmidt is a regular guest. He's professor emeritus of sociology at Illinois College and author of the book, How Christianity Changed the World. We'll be giving away a copy of his book to the best caller or emailer with questions and comments this afternoon. 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943, or talk back at issuesetc.org. Dr. Schmidt, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Well, thank you for having me again.
Let's start with the top, with higher education. Would higher education even exist as it does today, apart from Christianity's influence and impact?
That's a tough question in many ways, because I suppose one could argue there were forms of higher education, if you want to push it all the way back to Plato, but it wasn't really education as we know it. The Greeks under Plato and others never, ever really institutionalized education as we have it in universities today or even in high schools and grade schools. And the existence of higher education in universities, as we call it today, and often university education, higher education are synonymous terms, in reality is another product of Christianity. It was, in fact, in my book, I point out that the monasteries back in the Middle Ages, back to the 6th century and the like, were embryonic universities. And they then, they taught people at scriptoriums. And then by the 11th or 12th century, you had universities come into being, the University of Bologna in Italy, often seen as perhaps the first universities, and then University of Paris, and from there they went to Oxford in England and also in Germany. So then by the 12th century, I suppose you can say, with the founding of universities, you had higher education come on the scene. And all of those schools, every one of them, all of those universities, were Christian institutions run by Christians, taught Christian theology, taught Christians in law, taught them medicine. The University of Salerno, for example, in Italy, known for its embryonic research and studies in medicine. And so would higher education be in existence? Well, perhaps, but it would be very different. And, of course, it has become different. Higher education in our society today is basically secularized humanism, with the exception of some Christian colleges, and even they are often losing it. When you go back, for example, to the United States, you had Harvard University, which was Harvard College to begin with, was founded to train clergy. Likewise with Yale, likewise with Princeton, likewise with Columbia, which initially was called King's College. All of them were Christian institutions. In time, they became secularized and added subjects that they didn't initially have because, as I said, these institutions were first founded to train clergy. And in time, of course, they lost all Christian emphasis. And today, as I say, universities are citadels of secularism and sometimes paganism and sometimes also contrary to Christianity. And most people And students and professors do not really realize how much of their existence in the universities where they make their living and where they teach and where they have students come would not be in existence had the Christians not started them. Now, had there never been any Christianity, would there have been any universities? I don't know. That's a big guess. But we can't deny the fact that universities have their origin from the medieval monasteries, and all education ultimately, even below higher education, has Christian roots. It goes back to the second century, the catechetical schools that were in existence in Alexandria and later on in other places, which brought into play also, by the way, Christians were the first to make educational coeducational. The Greeks and the Romans really did not have coeducational schools. And even for boys, it was largely limited to what we would call the more privileged people in society. But Christianity in the catechetical schools, it took in women as well as men and taught them, and they picked up on what Jesus taught them in Matthew, "Go ye therefore and teach and make disciples of all nations." Christianity was dependent on teaching. And so you have had the impetus there for education on all levels, grade schools, high schools, and higher education, as we call it, to this very day.
When it comes to the issue of education, it wasn't that we simply look at parochial or Christian education and say, ah, there we see the influence. But we're looking at institutions that once were centers of Christian thought and Christian learning with a Christian worldview that have now subsequently deviated significantly from that worldview.
That's right. Most individuals today do not really realize. In fact, I had an individual when this book came out. He said, "I knew that hospitals had Christian origin, but," he said, "I didn't know about the education." And this person was a professor, very well educated, a lot of publishing. And so it's, to me, an example of how people do not really realize the influence that Christianity had in bringing about all forms of education. And, you know, just to give another illustration, a contemporary of Luther's, who was born a little after Luther's time and died after Luther's time, by the name of Johann Sturm, S-T-U-R-M, introduced the matter of graded education. Previous to that, there was no such thing. And today, of course, we tend to, it's unimaginable for us to see education not being graded. We started doing it from the first grade on. And we do it all the way through university education. Again, who was Sturm? He was a devout Christian, Lutheran for this matter. And Melanchthon, Luther's co-worker, was often called the preceptor of Germany because he introduced into Germany the gymnasium system, which is basically what we would call a high school preparatory system to go on to university. And you had, for example, then in the Protestant sector with Calvin, tremendous emphasis put on education. And it's always been a Christian hallmark, a byproduct of Christian theology. Although, as we've mentioned, you and I just a moment ago, it's largely lost and not recognized anymore.
Steve is listening in St. Louis. Steve, we're going into a break. What's your question or comment?
My comment is isn't it ironic that these great Christian institutions, as he's been pointing out, in Christian education, most Christians now are, I would call, almost anti-intellectual, in the sense that they really don't want to sit and study things like philosophy or be able to understand how do we get to where we are, history. And it's almost an anti-intellectualism that we see in the church today, contrary to what we saw even in Acts, where you had St. Paul being able to discuss with the Greeks on Athens, because why? He knew their philosophy because he was a learned man.
Thank you very much, Steve. Dr. Schmidt, about a minute or so before our break.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure I totally understand the question. Is he saying that the church is anti-intellectual or higher education in general apart from the church?
I think he's talking about how Christians with a legacy of strong education can pop American Christianity can tend today, sadly, to be anti-intellectual.
Well, yeah, there's a great deal of it, and it's not only confined to Christians. It's very much confined and maybe even more prominent among non-Christians. Our whole phenomenon that we have today in our society, the emphasis on political correctness and multiculturalism, for instance, is an anti-intellectual movement, because you cannot bring onto the scene, onto the podium, to debate and discuss ideas that might conflict with the ideology of political correctness. That's anti-intellectualism. I often used to tell my students, how does one define an intellectual versus a non-intellectual? Well, I like the distinction that was made by a German sociologist, not a Christian by men, but he said an intellectual lives for ideas. The non-intellectual lives off of ideas. And today our universities have become largely anti-intellectual, because students go, and they want students to come, to live off of education, to get a better job. That is really, in a sense, a subtle form of anti-intellectualism. And it conflicts with much of that was taught for centuries before. Getting a job was supposed to be a byproduct. It wasn't supposed to be the essence of education. It was not opposed to getting a job, but you were supposed to be, first of all, a well-rounded individual, and that's why we used to stress the liberal arts. The liberal arts, just this morning.
Let's come back to liberal arts on the other side of the break, because that's a key Christian concept in education, one that, again, along with a lot of those things introduced by Christianity into education, is sadly going the way of the dinosaur. We'll also talk about labor, economic freedom, and science under the influence of Christianity. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest, professor emeritus of sociology at Illinois College. He's author of the book, How Christianity Changed the World. When we come back, liberal arts, and then we'll move on to labor and economic freedom. I'm Todd Wilkins. Stay tuned.
Back by popular demand, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Most theologians, they trust man, not God.
Answers with Ken Ham, a well-known creation evangelist.
Many theologians say that Christians can believe in evolution and millions of years of Earth history. Why is that? The more I've researched this topic, the more I've discovered that these theologians who compromise with Genesis are putting their trust in man's fallible theories. They're really not full believers in the infallible Word of God. You know, in the Bible commentaries before the 1800s, most theologians accepted the six literal days of creation and a global Noah's flood. There's not a hint they believed in a universe billions of years old, but in the past two centuries, the Bible commentaries had theologians writing that the days of creation were not literal days, the flood of Noah was just a local event, and as you read carefully, you'll find that the underlying reason they question the creation days and global flood is because of man's fallible theories. It has nothing to do with what the biblical texts say. You know, it's sad that these theologians take the Bible figuratively and man's theories literally.
What does the book of Genesis have to do with the gospel message? Actually, there are some very strong connections, which we explore in a well-produced DVD, The Last Adam. It's a film on the death and resurrection of Christ and a great evangelistic tool. Get this DVD by calling our nonprofit ministry with your donation of any amount. The number is 1-888-89-ANSWERS. 888-89-ANSWERS.
Have you heard of the CLCC? In Hosea 4, we see, "My people are destroyed by lack of knowledge." The Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission can help educate Lutherans on being Lutheran. We treasure our Lutheran beliefs and think that all Lutherans would if they learn what we believe, teach, and confess. Visit our website, www.theclcc.org. Check out what we have to offer. Get on our mailing list, or better yet, join us. And maybe encourage your pastors or lay leaders to hold a seminar in your area. Go to theclcc.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's Wednesday afternoon, March the 18th. We're talking to Dr. Alvin Schmidt, part three of a five-part daily series with him on the impact of Christianity on civilization, talking education a little bit later, labor and economic freedom, and, believe it or not, science. 1-877-623-6943. or talkback@issuesetc.org. Listeners with the best questions or comments get a copy of Dr. Alvin Schmidt's book, How Christianity Changed the World. Dr. Schmidt, before the break, you were talking about the concept of liberal arts, this education for the sake of being a well-rounded, well-learned individual. Pick up where you left off, if you would.
Yes, right. And that was the basic premise. And we have largely, and I mentioned, forgotten that, or basically, distorted it. There was a time in education, even in this country, that you could not get a bachelor's degree unless you had Latin and Greek. Now you can get a bachelor's degree and never have seen a foreign language in your life. But we still tend to often call it liberal arts. Well, it no longer is. The liberal arts come back again from basically the Christian origin in the Middle Ages, where it talked about two types of or classes of liberal arts. There was the trivium, which consisted of rhetoric, logic, and grammar. And then there was the quadrivium, which consisted of arithmetic, astronomy, geometry, and music. Those were the liberal arts, and they carried on through our society for many, many years. But now, because schools, college, and university have become so occupationally oriented, that most students no longer have a background in liberal arts at all. They are basically, many of our universities have become trade schools.
Okay, then let's talk a little bit about labor and economic freedom. And actually, if you would, take us by way of segue from education, because one of the things in the Industrial Revolution that was of particular trouble, especially to Christians in America and Europe, was child labor and how it dovetailed together with education for children. Talk about that, if you would.
Yes, already in the 1700s and then the 1800s in England and Scotland, for example, you had Robert Raikes, who brought about Sunday schools. Now, when you and I hear Sunday schools, we think of a different phenomenon than it was initially when Robert Raikes in Scotland did it. He took poor children, many of them at 6 and 8, that worked in mines and other kind of menial labor who were uneducated, and he brought them together on Sunday to teach them. And then he found out he had to, first of all, teach them how to read and write. And so you had education, and again, it was an effort to do something for the poor children who were working. And then you had in the 1800s a movement in England to stop child labor. And again, it's a major Christian contribution. You still have child labor today in China and in other non-Christian countries, not very well or widely publicized, but it's definitely true. So again, the value of the human being, which we talked about a couple of days ago, was seen also in children, and that they would be not have to work as slaves almost. Many of them did. They died very early because they worked in wet mines and other kinds of industrial plants. And so finally we passed laws in this in England and in this country that child labor is illegal. And again, it was brought about by Christians. It never was a problem before Christians came on the scene.
All right, then, in other areas of human labor and economic freedom, how has Christianity had its greatest impact?
Well, one of the things that we often don't recognize is that labor is a biblical concept that is seen very positively. The Greeks particularly saw it labor, physical work, as something only fit for the slaves. In fact, it was a philosopher kings who were supposed to be the ones who were educated. And our education all consisted in terms of what we often call armchair reasoning, deductively. In fact, Plato condemned some of his cohorts or acquaintances who constructed geometric devices. This was something that a slave would do and a person who was well educated wouldn't. But in Christianity and the Bible, labor is highly rewarded and commended. For example, you have in the Old Testament already, the laborer is worthy of his hire. Don't muzzle the ox, as Moses said. In other words, he's also worthy of being paid his do that he gives. And you had then later, for example, in the Reformation era, the concept of vocatio coming about, from which we get the word vocation. And again, St. Paul underscores labor. He who doesn't work shouldn't eat, he told the Thessalonians. We see that labor was valued by Jesus. Jesus was a carpenter for many years until he formally entered his 3 years of ministry. Paul was a tent maker. So Christianity never despised labor. And then in the Middle Ages, you had the monasteries who, for example, combined study, learning with physical labor. The monks were not afraid to get dirt under their fingernails, so to speak. And that finally led even to the universities, that you began to test theories and ideas. The Greeks never did that. They had brilliant theories. They had the theory of the atom. They had the other kinds of theories, astronomical theories. But they never, ever tested any, because that was demeaning work, because it required labor. And that was fit for the slave. And that wasn't then until the 13th century, basically, that Christians in the university setting, for example, at Oxford, by the name of Grosseteste, and then his student Roger Bacon, that began to empirically, inductively test theories. And they all did these things to the glory of God, and none of them ever came up with a theory that did not somehow incorporate their theology.
So usually we hear nowadays that science, scientific inquiry, was held back for centuries by Christian thought, especially by the church, and that even today Christianity, even not as a theology but even as a worldview, is anti-scientific.
That's one of the biggest myths in our society. In fact, you know, if you look, for example, at the whole scientific endeavor. You had, for example, Alfred Northhead White, who, for example, and he was not a Christian. He was a very renowned philosopher. He said, for example, I should say Alfred North Whitehead, I made a mistake there. He said that the possibility of science generated antecedently to the development of modern scientific theory is an unconscious derivative from medieval Christian theology. And I cite other individuals. The fact that we say that Christianity is opposed to science, no, it was Christianity that first developed the universities and did science. Take, for example, Johann Kepler, who introduced into science the first three empirical laws. Who was Kepler? He was only 4 months shy of being ordained as a Lutheran pastor, and that didn't happen. But anyhow, when you and I go to study science, we've learned that the planets revolve elliptically. Well, that was the first law that Kepler, an ardent, devout Christian, discovered. He also discovered another law, that namely the Earth moves faster when it's closer to the sun and slower when it's farther from the sun. That's his second scientific law. And he had another law, the law of harmony, which is a little more complicated to explain. But without those three laws, astronomy could not exist. So Christianity was not opposed to science. You had Robert Boyle in England, for example. We know about, he was often called the father of chemistry. And you and I have learned even in high school of Boyle's law in chemistry. A devout Christian who gave money when he died to support missions and so forth. What about Louis Pasteur, from whom we get the word pasteurization? When he died in France, I mean, we know he discovered bacteria. When he died, he had the crucifix in one hand and his wife's hand in the other hand. And I illustrate man after man after man. It wasn't until the mid-1800s that you had secular materialism come into being, or some people call it atheistic materialism, and Christianity then was seen as faulting and retarding science. The very opposite is true. If it weren't for Christianity, I don't know where science would be today. It certainly wouldn't have been started for probably a long time after. And so, as I say, it's one of the biggest myths that exists, and it's taught as gospel truth, never, ever critically examined. And that's a very unfortunate thing. In fact, it's not examined because, again, we have a degree of anti-intellectualism going on.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest. We're talking about the impact of Christianity on education, labor, economic freedom, and we're talking about its impact on science. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College, author of the book How Christianity Changed the World. Our call-in number this Wednesday afternoon, March 18th, 1-877-623-6943. 10 more minutes with Dr. Alvin Schmidt left on the other side of the break. 1-877-623-MYIE or email us with questions or comments. We're giving away Dr. Schmidt's book, How Christianity Changed the World. Talk back at issuesetc.org. Talk back at issuesetc.org. So Christianity is key in the development of scientific thought. It has as its proponents some of the leading and most influential scientists in the world, the ancient world. What about today? People say, well, you could hardly be a real thoroughgoing scientist, especially in areas like biology and evolution, if you were a Christian. People say, how could a Christian consistently believe what he says he believes? Miracles? Come on. Resurrection? Please, if he wants to be a scientist. More on that after this. Working for a living. Work. Working for a living.
Because I'm working for a living. Oh, 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 working for a living. Oh, 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 taking what they're giving. Oh.
We've produced a new CD of two sermons preached by Pastor Todd Wilken, one for Lent and one for Easter. And we'll send you this new CD for any size donation during the season of Lent. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check, Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. And for any size gift between now and April 12th, we'll send you a CD of one of Todd's Lent and Easter sermons.
We know that many congregations are putting together their budgets for the next fiscal year. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your congregation's mission or advertising budget for 2009. Simply go to the sponsors page of our website, issuesetc.org, and find out more about the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc. You'll even find a one-page flyer that you can hand out. Thanks for your support.
Now, only our listeners can cancel us. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start. The foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes. Dedicated customer service and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House. Listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House. cph.org.
Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Collinsville, Illinois is happy to support the Christ-centered, cross-focused ministry of Issues Etc. Join us for worship, Bible classes, youth ministry, and other opportunities to grow in Christ. We have a Christian day school for children in preschool to 8th grade. We are located at 1300 Beltline Road. Call us at 618-344-3151 or visit www.goodshepherdcollinsville.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilken. We're talking the influence of Christianity on civilization, trying to break it down into its various facets today. Education, labor, economic freedom, science. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call in the next 10 minutes. 1-877-623-6943 or email your question or comment to us right here in the studio on this Wednesday afternoon. Talk back at issuesetc.org. Dr. Schmidt, another reason people might consider especially modern science to be incompatible with the Christian faith is because Christians, if they believe what the Bible teaches, will of necessity accept things like miracles. Your response?
Yes, that's right. And, of course, miracles do happen and have happened. And, you know, even the ancients never questioned the fact that miracles happen. Even some of the pagans admitted that in early Christianity, for example. It's just that we have, by definition, said miracles are impossible. And it's as simple as all that. Just because we define it doesn't mean to say it is true. And this is how what we basically operate with today in educational purpose, in educational context. And so the fact that miracles have happened and many times over, and the chief of these is the resurrection of Jesus Christ. The resurrection of Jesus Christ has been attested to much more so than a lot of ancient knowledge that we take for granted and wouldn't even think of questioning. So again, there's a tremendous bias and lack of knowledge behind the whole doubting of miracles and like. Yet, ironically, we use the word miracle so loosely today when, for example, some miners get trapped for several days and then they just get them out alive and he says, a miracle happened. Well, it really isn't a miracle, but we use the word miracle even though we tend to say there are no such things, which is rather oxymoronic, I suppose.
Joe is listening in his car. Joe, thank you for waiting and welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me on. Hey, my question was, I'd always kind of thought that science's influence on Western society was kind of more pushing it towards a more pragmatic outlook and that we didn't hold things to be true unless they could be displayed or shown to be true. And obviously, I always thought this kind of went against Christianity. But in my own background, I'm an engineer and have spent a lot of time studying science and technical related things and end up seeing in the world natural laws that kind of mirror the laws that spiritual, you know, that God set up for other things beyond what can be seen and observed. And I wonder with the bias that you're talking about in universities, if that doesn't help Christianity out some by not allowing some of the, you know, atheistic influences on people where they would have been before if they'd have been taught more of a well-rounded education with the wrong influences. I just wonder what you thought about that. Thanks.
Joe, thank you very much. Dr. Schmidt.
Well, I hope I'm going to address your question. The matter of scientists and Christians, the early scientists like Roger Bacon, Gross Testes, Francis Bacon, and Kepler a little later, basically were very strongly oriented toward knowledge being inductively based, empirically founded, empirically grounded. Now, that is not in conflict with the Bible. In fact, what is the resurrection of Jesus Christ? It was an historical, empirical event. It was not a faith event. It was not the disciples' faith that made the resurrection, but it was the resurrection, their encountering the resurrected Christ that produced faith. A good example of this is Thomas. He was not going to believe his fellow disciples for a whole period of 8 days, a week, from one Easter Sunday to the Sunday after. He was not going to believe that Christ rose from the dead. Jesus gave him what? Empirical evidence is here. Touch, see my wounds. Then we have the greatest confession recorded in the Bible. When he saw him experiencing my Lord and my God, you did rise. There is a miracle. And so Christianity has always been based on historical fact. In the Creed, we say crucified under Pontius Pilate. This was a historical event. We have tended to lose this today, but Christianity is based on history from which we derive faith and confidence. It's not that faith makes the history true of the resurrection. To the contrary. And so the whole idea of evidence is very compatible with Christianity. You even had in the Old Testament, for example, Gideon's fleece, where he wanted to know whether God really spoke. So he said, well, make the fleece wet and let the ground around it be dry. And then, oh, God, let me turn it around the other way. Make the fleece dry and the ground wet. What was he looking for? He was looking for empirical evidence that God was not just a figment of man's imagination. But that's what we tend to hear today, that people basically believe, or we'll put it this way, faith today is defined as something for which you believe for which there's no evidence. Well, that's not Christianity. That's paganism. Christianity without the foundation, as Paul said, if Christ be not risen from the dead, our faith is worthless, it's futile, it's empty, it's worth nothing. And this we have often even perhaps lost in many Christian circles. So we tend to equate all religions on the same level, and we call them the Muslim faith, the Buddhist faith, the Confucius faith. Well, if you look at St. Paul, he spoke the faith. It was only Christianity. And even the renowned historian who died not long ago, Jaroslav Pelikan at Yale University, said throughout the Middle Ages, the word the faith referred to Christianity and Christianity only. we've lost this today. And so as a result, we tend to think that Christianity is like the Muslims, the Mormons, etc., who do not require empirical evidence grounded or that is at the basis of their basic faith or belief. Christianity always was based on fact, something that happened. And so, you know, this is something that we need to remember as Christians.
If you could, since you raised the issue of Islam so much on the minds of people for the better part of the last decade, really, could you contrast briefly the impact of Islam as opposed to Christianity on things like education or labor or economic freedom or science?
Well, you're right. Christianity was very much oriented to teaching, as I said earlier, both men and women. It basically brought about universal education. It was not confined as it is with Muslims to this day. Women are second-class citizens, often not as well educated, often not permitted to do certain things like in Saudi Arabia. They're not permitted to even to drive a car or have a driver's license. In Iran, they're not permitted to a lot of other privileges that women in Western societies take for granted. Again, Christianity came along and gave freedom, as we talked about the first day, to women. And so in terms of education, likewise, much of what is in existence, there's a lot of mythology attached, for example. The whole scientific, we often read that science was very much in the 9th and 10th century, very much governed and motivated by Islam. Well, that's a very questionable assertion. For one finds very quickly that when it comes to the 11th, the 12th, the 13th, the 14th century, which we often call the origin of modern science, is basically totally reliant on what Christianity gave to them. And so, again, because we like to equate all religions, we tend to make the argument that the Muslims created as much in terms of knowledge as did Christianity. Let me give you one more example. Muslims occupy today about one fifth of the world's population. Out of roughly 6.5 billion, they have about 2 billion. But only 5% of scientific works and discoveries, inventions, come out of the Muslim countries. The rest comes from countries where Christianity has a powerful presence. That tells us something very, very noteworthy, I think.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is professor emeritus of sociology at Illinois College. He's author of the book, How Christianity Changed the World. You can read an excerpt of How Christianity Changed the World at our website, issuesetc.org. Click on demand. Dr. Schmidt, thank you very much for being our guest.
Well, thank you for having me again.
We'll continue our series with Dr. Schmidt tomorrow. We'll be talking about the influence of Christianity on the concepts and the practice of liberty, justice, yes, even slavery. Also tomorrow, we'll discuss Joseph, the guardian of Jesus, with Dr. Peter Scare. I like that concept. Guardian of Jesus, as opposed to the bulky phrase we often use, stepfather or adopted father of Jesus. Joseph, the guardian of Jesus, tomorrow with Dr. Peter Scare on Issues, Etc. Joe in St. Louis, give us a call back. Give us your address, and we'll send you a copy of How Christianity Changed the World. Now, this is a tough row to hoe because in an age that considers itself hyper-scientific, Christianity is getting a bad rap, not only in the classroom and the laboratory and the media, but everywhere else, because Christianity is considered to be anti-intellectual. It's considered to be a thing of experience and feeling, not of fact, not of intellectual inquiry, and certainly not of history. But nothing could be further from the truth. Christianity itself, as a theology, is an eventful religion. It is based on events that really did occur that must have been demonstrated to have occurred on evidence, like a living Christ coming out of a tomb after 3 days, seen by many. Christianity is an eventful religion. And what that means is that the Christian mind then, as strong as it is grounded in the matters of faith, also bears fruit everywhere in society. When it puts its mind, its Christian mind, to the matters of human events and human affairs, what results is, as I've said before, the good of our neighbor, the further of true justice, economic freedom, and science. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.